Mary Peltola, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So for folks who may not know you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. My name is Mary Peltola. I was born and raised in Bethel along the Kuskokwim River, actually three little villages outside of Bethel. And I grew up commercial fishing, the kind of commercial fishing that we did on the Kuskokwim when I was growing up. We fished full shackle gill nets and we did drifting. We have set nets for subsistence, but that was not customary for commercial fishing. And I grew up commercial fishing for kings at the beginning of the season and then chums right after that and reds. And then we finished up with silvers. And my family also had a tender boat operation. My dad ran a tender boat. And then my sister and I, were captains of a commercial fishing boat different times over the years. So that's how I was raised. I worked for Fish and Game when I was in college. I imagined I was going to become a teacher, and so I went to college teacher training. And as it happened, I did a legislative internship at the Capitol in Juneau in 1996, and really was drawn to public policy and the public process. And in 1996, I ran for office. I ran for state house, and I lost by 56 votes. But in 1998, I was elected and then reelected four more times. So I served 10 years in the state house. When I was first elected, I served with Bill Williams, who many people down here know, and then he was replaced with Kyle Johansson. And by the time I left, Kyle was still there. So I haven't had the pleasure of working as a colleague with Dan Ortiz, but certainly Bert Stedman and Albert Kukesh and a lot of Southeast folks. So I've got strong ties to Southeast through work in the legislature and going to UAS there in Juneau as well. So that's a little bit about me.
And tell me why you're running for Congress.
Well, primarily my interest was on reauthorizing Magnuson-Stevens Act. I think everyone recognizes that we are living in a very different paradigm than the one we had before 2010. The Magnuson-Stevens Act hasn't been reauthorized since 2007, and we just have a real different ocean productivity level. We have a different level of abundance. I would say we don't have the abundance that we're accustomed to as Alaskans. Our fish are not only fewer, but there's so many more males. There are very few number of females proportionally, and they're a lot smaller than they used to be. When I was growing up, the average size of a Chinook salmon was about 30 pounds. And of course, the range was much bigger. We had huge kings and then, you know, smaller kings, but the average size was 30 pounds. Now the average size of a Chinook salmon, at least on the West Coast, is 11 pounds, and that's the same size as like a large chum. So real difference in the number of salmon coming back, the size. And it seems one of the things I've heard from scientists is 20 years ago, for every spawning salmon, six returned. Now for every spawning salmon, less than one salmon returns. So we are definitely in a time of decreased abundance, and that's presenting a myriad of food security issues on the west coast of Alaska. And it's been surprising to me how little that's been talked about and how little action has been taken on that. And it's really been status quo. We've been in this low abundance paradigm for 13 summers now, and we don't see traction in terms of policy or really investing in science. And there seems to be an attitude at the policy level that until we know why these things are happening, we can't do anything. And I believe we need to take precautionary management and be changing the way we're doing things while we're finding out what the causes of these problems are. And of course, we all recognize it's probably a myriad of problems. It's multifaceted. We can't attribute these shortages to just one thing. It's probably 10 or 20 things happening at once. But I think precautionary management has to be looked at very seriously, just because it seems to be that we're in a very different ecosystem than we are accustomed to as Alaskans.
And for folks who are not familiar, can you sort of explain what the Magnuson-Stevens Act is, and you know what you hope to what reforms you would hope to put forward for that law?
Sure. Magnuson-Stevens Act is a federal piece of legislation, and it has a number of different councils throughout the United States. Alaska is managed under the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and that act dictates how they operate. And, you know, another issue within that is there is the way that the council is supposed to be in terms of how it's written and the intent. And then there's the actual culture within the council, and it really defers to the state of Alaska. And my hope is that the federal agencies take more responsibility and really, and of course they need to continue to partner with the state of Alaska Department of Fish and Game, but I think it's important that on the federal side, there is a recognition that the feds have a responsibility and really need to be looking at parity in terms of all of the users in Alaska, all of the people who depend on our resources, not just the folks who have an economic interest and just an economic interest.
And so what are some of the other key issues that you'd like to address as a congresswoman?
Well, I would love to serve all Alaskans, regardless of party. I am running as a Democrat. However, folks who worked with me in Juneau will be the first to tell you I'm very nonpartisan. I helped reestablish the Bush Caucus, which was a coalition of 10 out of 40 on the House side of off-road system legislators. And we worked really well. I think it was in large part because of the Bush Caucus and our coalition that Ketchikan and other communities were able to not have that really damaging cruise ship tax. And that was really a recognition by rural folks that we need to have a say and a seat at the table and a part of deciding what is happening in our own districts and our own regions. I'm very nonpartisan. The Bush Caucus was almost every year, 5 Republicans and 5 Democrats. And we didn't just focus on our regions or off-road system. Almost all the time, what is good for a rural area is good for the whole state. And we were on the forefront of protecting K-12 education, and not just, like I said, for the rural areas, but for all areas of the state. K-12 is a critical piece of every legislative end-of-session package. It certainly was when I was there. It's one of the biggest components of our budget. It's over $1 billion. It's very expensive to have education in all the different ways that we do it across the state. But working in a bipartisan way, I think it's really important in Alaska, as well as across the states, that we find a way to get away from this hyper-partisanship. I think it's very toxic, and I think it doesn't help us move forward. I think it really takes us backwards, and I would certainly like to be part of that effort. I think respectfulness and civility is a critical piece of public service and public policy. We cannot be effective if we are not comfortable working together on solutions. It's hard to get to solutions if you're so emotionally charged or defensive. It's just really important that we focus on policies, we focus on making sure everyone is at the table. One of the things that I am finding across America is, regardless of what your background is, everyone is feeling disenfranchised. Everyone is feeling forgotten and isolated, and that includes Caucasians and men. And, you know, I think that some of the dialogue has been about groups that are typically seen as minorities not being at the table, but I think 100% of us feel that we have been minimized and forgotten. And I think it's just really important to make sure that everyone feels comfortable and included in the discussion on whatever topic that is. So that's another thing that I'm very focused on. My platform is being pro-jobs, pro-families, pro-fish, and pro-choice.
I want to talk a little bit about climate change.
Sure.
And, you know, as you're aware, you know, Alaska is very much a resource state, mm-hmm. and we get a lot of our money from oil and other resources. And I guess, how do you balance the need to monetize Alaska's resources to fund state government and schools and all these other great things with also, you know, addressing the urgent threat of climate change?
Well, in terms of energy, I think energy is one of those issues. When I first went into the legislature, that wasn't something that I was very focused on. But by the time I left, I recognized that every single day you have to be having conversations about how to decrease the cost of energy across Alaska. And that's both electric and home heating and gas and oil for and avgas. But all of those and high energy costs really affect every single household and every single Alaska resident. And it's ironic because we are an energy producing state, but because we don't have capacity for refineries, we are paying as much or more as residents of Hawaii, which is not an energy producing state. So I think that we need to look at things in terms of short-term meeting needs short-term with petroleum products and really investing and, you know, times three or times 10 in long-term energy solutions, which is honestly renewable energies. We've got to get our tidal, our hydro, our wind, solar, all of those things. And that is going to take a substantial investment. But when I was serving in office, and that was 14 years ago, we were so much further away from those renewables being accessible. They were, you know, we couldn't even get our renewable energy into the grid. And we've gone so far beyond some of those initial hurdles, and a lot of the technology is more off the shelf. But there still needs to be a lot done to get to where we need to be. And so I think it's a balance of balancing short-term needs with long-term solutions.
And kind of on that same note, a big discussion here in Southeast Alaska over the past several years, and really since the early 2000s, has been the roadless rule. Mm-hmm. And that's the rule, of course, that limits development in roadless areas of the Tongass National Forest. And it's sort of ping-ponged back between being in effect and not being in effect between, you know, subsequent presidential administrations. And I'm curious how you as a congresswoman might approach that. I mean, do you think that the roadless rule should maybe be codified in U.S. law, or is that, or you know, or not?
Well, I'm keeping an open mind. I think it's extremely important in every region of the state to listen very carefully to the people who live in that region. My outlook is that whatever projects are going forward or development is happening, there has to be social license to operate, meaning the people who live closest to that development need to be comfortable with the risks inherent in that development. One of the things that I think is fascinating is the level that the federal government is willing to invest in private enterprises, when I believe that if a project is truly economic, the investment should be on the private side, if all of the rewards are on the private side, if all of the benefits are then going to the shareholders, then the cost should be on that company, and the company should be able to justify if it pencils out. And if it doesn't, I don't, you know, I will have an open mind, but I think that there are some concerns about investing a lot of federal dollars on private roads that will ultimately only benefit certain shareholders of that private entity. And I think that needs to be balanced out. So I will be deferring and really listening closely to the people who live closest to the issue. And so that would be people who live within the Tongass.
And I guess just one final question. I mean, Alaska is obviously a vast state with lots of different people, with lots of different interests. And as, you know, one representative for the entire state, how do you see yourself representing, you know, how do you see yourself reaching out to constituents all over the state?
Alaska is unique. We really have six states within our state, and they are all so completely different. And it's very common for people who were born and raised here never to have been to the various other huge regions of Alaska. So that is definitely something that whoever wins the seat is going to have to really make an effort at. And I have a tremendous advantage. My dad was a commercial pilot when I was growing up, and I had a chance to see a lot of different portions of the state. Of course, serving as a state legislator for 10 years, you get invited to many different things in many different regions. So I have traveled extensively throughout the state, on Alaska, Kodiak, throughout Southeast, Barrow, Kotzebue, just, you know, throughout the state in various different capacities. So I do feel like I have a good handle on the different regions. Of course, I haven't been to every community. One of the things that I learned very young, having grown up in three villages, is if you've been to one community, you've been to one community. They're all so different. And even though they may be within eyeshot of each other, those communities could be extremely different and have very different outlooks. So that is something that I always keep in mind, that even if you have been to the neighbor community, that doesn't mean that you've been everywhere. So, and it's very common for neighboring communities to have very different outlooks on things like development or education or what have you. I do think I am as well positioned as anyone running for this seat to represent the whole state.
All right. And I wanted to go ahead and open it up if there's anything else that you wanted to discuss or any closing thoughts that you had.
I'm just very excited to be here for the Blueberry Festival, and tonight I'll be going over to Metlakatla for Founders Day, and I have not yet had the pleasure of going to Metlakatla before. I've been to Ketchikan a number of times. I've had the wonderful good fortune of having gone fishing at Waterfall before, so I know a little bit about this area and its beauty and its abundance, and I'm just really thrilled to be back and really appreciate the warm welcome and hospitality.
All right. Well, Mary Peltola, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.